And now to a conversation that's been brewing in the blogosphere. In recent years, many people have come to see the gay rights movement mainly as a question of whether or not same-sex couples will ever achieve the right to marry across the country. The issue came to the forefront again just this past November when California passed a ballot measure known as Proposition 8 and became the 29th state to pass a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. That's in contrast to only two states, Connecticut and Massachusetts, that allow same-sex marriage. And so that reality and other setbacks in the movement have led some to question whether gay marriage is indeed the right fight for right now, whether the focus on gay marriage has actually caused setbacks in the fight for inclusion for gay and lesbian couples and families. With us now to talk about this are four people with strong opinions on the matter. Here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio are Alexander Robinson. He's executive director and CEO of the National Black Justice Coalition. It's a civil rights group that focuses on issues of concern to black same-gender-loving individuals, and journalist Michael Sean Winters, who writes a daily political blog for the Catholic weekly magazine America and has written extensively for many political journals. Also joining us, political commentator and author Andrew Sullivan. He's a senior editor and daily blogger for The Atlantic Monthly and author of the best-selling book about gay rights, Virtually Normal, An Argument About Homosexuality. He joins us from his office in Washington, D.C. And political commentator and activist Jasmine Canick, who also blogs at jasminecanick.com. She's with us from NPR West. I welcome you all, and thank you so much for joining us, and Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year.
Now, I'm going to start with Michael Sean Winters and Jasmine Canick because you don't know each other. You are on opposite coasts. And yet in each of your blogs or columns, you wrote something very similar within weeks of the Proposition 8 ballot measure having passed in California. Michael, you wrote that, quote, gay marriage advocates do not want to admit it, but they've made life harder for gays in most states in America. When the Massachusetts court first ruled in favor of gay marriage, I was living in Little Rock, Arkansas, and my gay neighbors understood the significance of the decision for them immediately. They knew the backlash would make it less likely that they would ever get the legal protections afforded by civil unions. Why do you think that?
Well, you know, the difference between the gay marriage propositions and, say, the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s is that because these laws are at the state level and are being fought at the state level, the backlash can be felt very differently in different states. And that didn't happen with the civil rights movement, which was a push for federal legislation. And so when I was living in Little Rock, my neighbors understood immediately. They thought the backlash is going to come. And sure enough, Arkansas is one of those states that now has something it did not have then, which is a constitutional amendment banning not just gay marriage, but civil unions. And I do think civil unions, if we were pursuing that nationwide, has a fairly good shot at passing. I think that corresponds to a kind of sense of fairness that the American people have.
So you're saying that the right fight would be civil unions?
I think so, yes.
Jasmine, what about you? You've also written some actually fairly withering comments about the fight for gay rights. You're saying that, in fact, that this is kind of an obsession of the white elite gay leadership.
Yeah, actually, and I do believe that. I think that the gay civil rights movement has sort of moved from its traditional roots in terms of, you know, when you look at issues like hate crimes and you look at issues like HIV and AIDS, you know, the focus over the past several years has just been on same-sex marriage, while those issues like hate crimes and HIV and AIDS have continued to ravage our community, they're just not a focus anymore. And, you know, going into 2009, I just wonder if maybe, you know, this movement needs to redefine itself once again and maybe look at what the priorities are, because, you know, it's really hard to get married when you're dead.
As one philosopher put it, the proof of justice lies not in the voice of the majority. That any time people assert a human right, someone is going to object, and that rights can't be calculated in that way. What do you say to that?
Look, I don't have a problem with people wanting to move forward on the issue of gay marriage. I think it's about balance. I personally, you know, wouldn't accept a civil union, just me personally, because I don't believe that I'm a second-class citizen. But at the same time, as a black lesbian, I'm clear on what my priorities are as a lesbian, and gay marriage isn't at the top of the list. But when we get to that point, for me personally on the list, it wouldn't be a civil union. It would be gay marriage. My issue is just that we need to figure out how to balance what we're working towards. We cannot put all of our money and all of our energy solely into gay marriage, forsaking everything else.
Andrew Sullivan and Alexander, let's bring you into the conversation. Andrew, let's go to you first, because you, I think, are probably one of the best known writers in the country who's engaged the issue of gay marriage as a proponent opponent. What do you say to this argument that perhaps this is the wrong fight for right now?
Well, I'll take the two factual assertions of Michael Shawn and Jasmine. The first is that the battle to end miscegenation laws in the United States and the civil rights movement was because marriage is a state institution, fought state by state across a century and a half of the civil rights movement. It was, of course, the very last thing to fall eventually in Virginia in 1967. But it was conducted by the black civil rights movement on a state-by-state basis because that's the only basis upon which these things have been dealt with in American history. Secondly, insofar as the civil rights movement or that Jasmine speaks of, in fact, the Human Rights Campaign has made its first priority this hate crimes law for the last 12 years, and it's still the first priority for the Human Rights Campaign. So I just don't see the factual basis for the assertions that have been already made.
And I have to mention
secondly,
here, I'm sorry, Andrew, let me point out here that we actually asked the Human Rights Campaign to make their executive director, Joe Solomonis, available for this conversation. They declined to make him available for this conversation. I just want to point that out. I'm going to hear a brief comment from Alexander Robinson, then we need to take a short break, and we're going to come back and continue this conversation. But Alexander, what about Jasmine's point? Wrong priorities. There are too many, and Michael Shawn's point, too many other pressing priorities to devote this amount of attention and time to.
Well, I agree that there are many priorities, and as a black gay man, I am extraordinarily concerned about the continuing rise of the AIDS epidemic. But I don't think that it's an either-or. And I would also say that, you know, the investment of resources is not driven by organizations. They're driven by this grassroots movement of individuals who are very concerned about getting equality and protecting their families. I mean, the first gay couples sought marriage licenses in 1971. That's how long this has been happening. So I agree that we should have a conversation. We should focus efforts on an array of issues, which, quite frankly, many of us are working on the whole set of issues. And because marriage is such an emotional issue, I think that the media coverage of the work that we're doing, the ways in which this plays itself out, certainly would suggest that marriage is the one and only or the top priority. But there are many other priorities being pursued.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about gay marriage, if gay marriage is the right civil rights fight for right now, with Jasmine Canick, Andrew Sullivan, Michael Shawn Winters, and Alexander Robinson. We'll be right back. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're continuing our conversation about gay marriage and whether it's the right fight right now. I'm joined by political commentator and author Andrew Sullivan. He's a senior editor and daily blogger for The Atlantic Monthly. Political commentator Jasmine Canick, who blogs at jasminecanick.com. Alexander Robinson is president of the National Black Justice Coalition, and journalist Michael Shawn Winters, who writes a daily political blog for the Catholic Weekly magazine America. Andrew, I want to go back to you. Your argument is that, in part, that the debate over marriage equality has, in part, changed the culture to allow some of these other steps of inclusion. And the polls do show that Americans support civil unions. They support people who are openly gay serving in the U.S. military. But what's your argument for why the fight for marriage equality or gay marriage has somehow led that acceptance? Couldn't that just be a correlation as opposed to a cause or causative?
I don't think it's crudely causative. I do think it's a function of gay people in all walks of life coming out and telling their stories. But look, what is being gay? Being gay is about loving members of the same gender, and that's what it's about. And the fundamental public institution that relates to the love of one person for another is civil marriage. So I don't know how you get away from this question with this matter at hand, the actual phenomenon we're discussing. The question to me is not why we are discussing marriage rights. It's why it took us so long to get to the heart of the matter.
Michael Shawn Winters addressed that point because you make the opposite point. You're saying that why not go after Social Security benefits for gay and lesbian domestic partners, which the public supports, adoption rights for gays and lesbians. Why do you think that?
You know, I was at an event in 2004. I was working on a campaign in Connecticut, and an attorney came in from the gay rights organization to speak to our campaign. And she began by saying, you know, what is marriage? Marriage is 543 provisions of the federal legal code. And I said, that's funny. I thought it was the old ball and chain. If you went to my parents, you know, rest in peace, my mother, and asked her, what is marriage? The word rights would not be a part of her answer to that. I don't think civil marriage is the central institution with which our culture deals with love. Sacramental marriage is. We may not be talking
civil
about that.
Culture? No,
Andrew, we may not be talking about that, but when you say the word marriage and you put that out there, that is what people mean. It's what their parents did and what their grandparents did and what their great-grandparents did. And my feeling is if we went forward with a proposal that said, here are the congeries of rights, anyone can have that, but the word marriage should not be changed by a 4-3 vote of the California Supreme Court or by a 52-48 vote of the California populace.
Andrew, you were about to say something, then Alexander.
If Michael Shawn really thought that if we just went and said, well, can we have exactly the same rights and call it, I don't know, sicko marriage or civil unions or some other thing, do you really think that the religious right would agree to that?
I think it depends on who you talk to. I'm aware
no,
that...
No, they all actively, clearly oppose it.
I think, you know, there in Puerto Rico, I know there was an instance where this came up, and there it's slightly different because they have a civil law, not a common law tradition, and it came up. And there the church actually did not oppose the civil unions. It's just that it be expanded to include anyone who is legally domiciled together. And they pointed out there are many complicated relationships in the society that could use, you know, benefits and death benefits and health care rights and things like that. And so, you know, in that instance, I think the church clearly, the Catholic Church.
You are
I'm
representing
about,
the Catholic Church.
No. I'm just giving you
an
example
but
of a different approach to the issue that avoided a culture war.
What he's saying is that marriage is such a cultural flashpoint that these rights could have been achieved without triggering
that's what
the
idea. That's what they told the people fighting the miscegenation laws.
Absolutely.
Alexander?
Again and again and again.
And the idea that we would have to settle for something less, or that there is some monopoly that heterosexuals have over the word marriage. I mean, it makes no sense.
Do you persuade people who don't already agree with you? That's the question I'm asking.
Well,
because we're not going to. Our purpose here is not to resolve fundamental differences.
But this is Michael Shawn and Jasmine are obviously not making any arguments to persuade any straight people.
I'm not saying anything because I don't understand why we're wasting our time on this. I mean, you know, it's clear that we have two people who feel that going into 2009, gay marriage should continue to be focus number one. For some reason, I guess it's the thinking within the gay civil rights movement that once we achieve gay marriage, you know, all will be well. There will be, everything will be equal with heterosexuals. Well, I have a news flash. I can get married tomorrow, but I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to still get pulled over for driving while black. I'm still going to be the last to be hired and the first to be fired. So it's not going to be equal for everyone, but for people like you, Andrew, yeah, you will have your equality after we get gay marriage.
Well, Jasmine, why don't you take that point, and I'm going to let
people
Andrew
like
respond.
Me, well, exactly. Can you
I'm sorry,
what
white
you mean
gay
by
male
that?
Or white
oh,
male.
White.
I don't want to
so
sue
it's about
your
race.
Sexual orientation.
Race.
But it's always been about race. Because again,
okay.
This movement,
well, then,
you point to me someone who is the head of one of these big gay civil rights movement organizations who is not a white gay female or male. You know, even here in California, all of our ads, all everything, again, which is part of the reason why there was such a huge backlash after Proposition 8, and going back to my original point of it setting us back in a ways within certain communities of color, in particular the African American community.
Jasmine, I think it's appropriate to let Andrew respond if he cares to. Now, can we allow that? And then
I do want to say that I think Jasmine is right in one respect, which is that the religious salience of marriage in the African American community is very, very strong, and homophobia within the African American community is obviously much stronger than in some other communities, and that we did a terrible job and have done a terrible job, those of us in the gay rights movement who are African-American and those of us who are not, and other different races, of communicating better within that community. And I think we failed badly, and I think that's a very important thing for us to do. But I don't think we will make that kind of approach by dividing everybody racially.
Let me just jump in briefly just to say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with political commentators Michael Shawn Winters, Jasmine Canik, and Andrew Sullivan, and activist Alexander Robinson. We're talking about whether gay marriage is the right fight for right now. We only have a couple of minutes left, so I want everyone to get a final thought. And I think that Jasmine set us on the final thought that I'd like us to engage with, which is what should happen next in your view in this discussion. And Andrew, you were speaking, so why don't you take the ball?
I think we need to keep making the case for our equality as human beings and as citizens. And that will obviously mean the right to civil marriage. And I think that's a hard road. It's a tough road. It will mean enormous opposition. But you see, my view is that the bigger the backlash, the surer the sign that you're closer to the real thing. And that the backlash is inversely correlated with how important the goal is. And I think backlash is a sign that we're doing the right thing, and I think we have to withstand it and move forward and make our case clearly and openly and reasonably to non-gay people every opportunity we take. That's the next step. That was the last step. That will always be what we should do.
Alexander?
First, I believe that we should fight for our full equality, including federal civil rights legislation. But let's be clear, most of the gay and lesbian organizations yesterday and today asked their membership across the country to write to members of Congress to say that we must pass the hate crimes bill, we must pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act to protect people in the workplace, that in fact there is a focus on other issues. I believe that there are issues of racial justice that I would love to see the movement take on. We have not done that in a way, I think, that is even sort of tactically in our interest, so that our allies in other communities know that. But we cannot do any of those things singularly. We must take them all on. That is the challenge that any minority community is going to face. And marriage equality is one of those. Fighting for the rights of gay and lesbian families to be protected, whether that's in the workplace, on the streets, or in their livelihood, in their homes.
Michael Shawn Winters, final thought from you?
I'm very disturbed by the recriminations in the wake of the Proposition 8 fight in California between the black community and the gay community. And if a gay leader were here sitting at the table, I would say, please, can we focus on AIDS in the black community and ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is an area where black Baptist churches can support us. There's no theological difficulties, but let's repair that breach and work on something together. And in that process, I mean, I want to commend Andrew. I think, you know, the thing that Andrew's, you know, has put this issue of gay marriage as much as any single American on the national landscape, but what he's really doing is living in a committed relationship with a partner in a very public way. That is actually how this issue is going to move forward. It's going to move forward culturally.
Not a partner, a husband.
Husband. I'm sorry, your husband.
Thank you. That is a difference, yeah. And that's what we've been fighting for 20 years. And I think it's partly the mindset that cannot even grasp our equality, even when it's here. I mean, there's a pessimistic tone about this, which I find befuddling. We have marriage in America, in two states, and we have it recognized in a couple of others, and we have civil unions and domestic partnerships growing across the country. I think that this has been a much more successful movement than people are currently saying, and I think that we're overly critical of it, given the enormity of the task that we face. And if you look at how long it took African Americans to get the right to marry anyone they wanted, from slavery
to
marriage equality, it took over a century.
Hold on a second, Jess, please. Mm-hmm.
Took over a century between slavery and marriage equality for African Americans. And we want this in 20 years and all over and done with no backlash. Let's get real. This is a long struggle.
Jasmine, is there something you're dying to say?
I just always find it interesting how people want to always point to the black civil rights movement, but know nothing about the movement or its people or its history. It always just puts a smile on my face because it just continues to show the disconnect that we have within the gay community and that we will continue to have.
Why wasn't, though, a gesture of respect, though? Why wasn't is it?
No, it's not respect when, again, throughout the years, you know, in the gay civil rights movement, there's always been this look backwards towards what Black people have done, what we did in our movement, how we were able to move forward. And it's just interesting because it's like, if you want to model your movement after ours, I mean, I would think that the first thing you would learn to do or you would understand is why we did what we did and understand that history. But apparently that is not the case, because we continue to still have these issues of race, these issues of class to this day within the LGBT community. Forget, let's not talk about what's going on outside the gay community with gays and Blacks. Even within the LGBT movement, we have these issues among Black gays and white gays, Latino gays, and Asian gays.
I just want to respond again. I agree that, you know, racial issues continue to plague the whole country. And the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community is not exempt from that. I take it and wear it as a badge of honor that, in fact, the things that my parents, grandparents, great-grandparents did in making this into a more perfect union is being looked back on, not just by the lesbian and gay rights movement, but the women's movement, the movement for rights of people with disabilities, all looked back on the civil rights movement with great admiration for what was achieved and accomplished. And I think that we have to not make comparisons, but clearly understand that movements take time, changing hearts and minds takes time. I am very optimistic that we will be able to achieve full equality in our lifetime.
We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you all for a spirited and rich discussion. I appreciate your participating. Alexander Robinson is the Executive Director and CEO of the National Black Justice Coalition. We were also joined by Michael Sean Winters, who writes a daily political blog for the Catholic Weekly magazine America. His latest book is Left at the Altar, How the Democrats Lost the Catholics and How the Catholics Can Save the Democrats. They were both here with me in our Washington, D.C. studios. Also with us is journalist and author Andrew Sullivan. He's a senior editor and blogger for The Atlantic Monthly and author of the best-selling book about gay rights, Virtually Normal, An Argument About Homosexuality. And with us from California, political commentator and activist Jasmine Canick. She blogs at jasminecanick.com. I thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.